The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
So, for the week trending, we're joined by our old friend Carl Dieter from Irish Mortgage Brokers and also by Caitlin McBride, freelance journalist. Thank you both very much for being with us today. Carl, if anyone now was to take note of the significant meals that you've had, if you've been in a pub or a restaurant recently, would they discover that you had been eating food or were just paying a sort of a €9 surcharge to have a pint?
They'd probably find that I was eating a lot of chips and things that I probably shouldn't be eating. And that explains partly why I've put on about a stone over the coronavirus pandemic. But I would have to say as well, I don't know what the general feeling in this country is, but I'm definitely at my breaking point with the way things are being done. Absolutely. Like, I still struggle to understand how eating a 9-year-old meal stops the spread of coronavirus. I don't understand what the Minister of Health is trying to achieve with this. I don't like where it's going. It's not being explained. And actually, you know what it gives me? It gives me the same feeling that I had back during the time of the bank bailout, where you feel like you're a passenger on a ship where everything on the future is being bet. Now, this is only a small thing, but it's all starting to add up, where everything is being done with, you know, no thinking about lots of different constituencies out there that matter, such as healthy people, such as people who just want to have the ability to socialize, to see their friends. You know, most people are trying to follow the guidelines. We don't need, a big brother approach to how we live. I think it's really wrong.
Of course, this knows this idea, and there has been some clarification, and we'll be getting back to it again after 5 o'clock, that the authorities will be able to check the receipts, the till receipts of all of the various pubs that are serving as restaurants to check that they have actually been serving a meal. But Caitlin McBride, there is significant anecdotal evidence to suggest that a lot of pubs have been serving pints and other drinks without giving over the food. So aren't the authorities entitled to ensure that if everybody else is sticking to the rules, that there should be then checks done on those suspected of breaking them?
Although I've heard kind of similar anecdotal evidence, I suppose, of places, you know, you go in and there's empty pizza boxes and places are saying, you know, leave them on the table. But I mean, that is absolutely the minority. Most people have accepted COVID, and I think most business owners in particular and customers all the same just want some semblance of normalcy. And to introduce this measure with little logic or additional information as to how it's actually going to ensure, as Carl said, you know, stopping the spread of COVID, it really kind of defies logic. I mean, and to kind of say that there is anecdotal evidence, I mean, there is, you know, the guards are there to enforce this legislation, and they have been, and they've been quite active in doing so. But I fail to understand at all how going through the receipts of a pub to ensure that they've served a certain amount of food is in any way going to hinder the further progress of COVID. I mean, I'm kind of just fresh from a few days away, and it was anywhere I went was extremely strict. I mean, you had to get €9 for each person per drink, and you're kind of thinking there, you know, there's this kind of virtual measuring system for customers to avail of. And I just, it makes absolutely no sense to me. And also the manner in which it was communicated, or lack of communication, is appalling. I mean, for the trade bodies that are involved, for the customers who now have to, you know, adhere to, I suppose, kind of this fear of thinking, I mean, I know Simon Harris is saying that, you know, the government isn't interested in if you had the Banoffee or not, but it kind of seems as if they are. And I mean, I doubt that there's anybody going through a list of receipts and knowing, you know, Caitlin McBride had X, Y, and Z at whatever. But this idea that there is going to be access to an individual and what they're eating and this kind of nanny state that it's perpetuating is completely baffling to me.
Of course, yeah. As well, Carl, you might have proof that you have purchased the food, but there's none that you've actually consumed it.
Look, Matt, the thing is, when you discuss something so illogical and you discuss it as if it has any credibility, it almost lends credibility to the idea. Okay, so what I'd like to say is all of this is junk, nonsense, anti-scientific, anti-factual. Let's just talk about, like, the way people are. Can you go and drink a pint? €5. A pint of beer now costs €14 because you have to have at least a 9-year-old meal with it. The other thing is no one has ever shown that if you eat a nine-euro meal, that you won't catch coronavirus.
And no, but hold on, Carl. Carl, there are listeners getting in touch saying that you're sort of misrepresenting the situation here, right? That what it is, it's a measure to modify people's behaviour. If you're having a meal, you will drink less in the time you're allowed on the premises. And also remember that initially, the plan wasn't to open up pubs at all. The plan was to let restaurants and cafes reopen and not pubs. But what many pubs did was they took advantage of the fact that they also had a restaurant license and were able to serve food to open up. That hadn't been the original intention. So
prohibitionists have been with us since time immemorial. At one stage in the USA, they actually gained sway. And it was a disastrous era in American history because it led to the rise of people who sold illegal alcohol, like Al Capone. So, like I said, the point about this being ridiculous is, say if I do go to a pub and I want to drink six pints in an hour and I eat a substantial meal, or I don't and I drink six pints, what difference does it make? It's anti-factual to believe that that stops or makes any difference to the pandemic.
If you have food in your stomach, you have less room to knock back the six pints. You won't be able to drink that much alcohol in the 105 minutes. And you're also then in a situation where if you drink less, you're less likely to start shouting or spraying around saliva, which transmits COVID-19.
Matt, you've drank lemonade on this one, mate. This is mental stuff, okay? It really is. Or maybe I'm mental. You know, maybe that's what it is. Maybe I believe in having my own freedoms and the right to go around unmolested and do normal things like drink a pint of beer without having to report to someone, without having to, you know, have special rules around all of that. But, you know, why don't we just ban alcohol? I mean, the whole point is people want to have the right to go to a bar, okay, drink a pint and leave. They're saying, no, you can't do that without ordering food. Like, the food thing is a myth. And it's a real weird form of trying to control the situation that doesn't need control. Why don't we have to have a 9-euro meal before you step onto public transport? Why don't you have to have a 9-euro meal before you walk down the street? It's nonsense. It's all nonsense. They're not making even a 9-euro meal to go to church.
I just said to listeners, this is not Michael Healy-Ray with an American accent. This is Carl Dieter, who is with us on the program this evening. I want to move on, though, because we are returning to that item after 5 o'clock. And I want to play you a little bit of audio from something that happened on Sky News yesterday morning when presenter Kay Burley interviewed the British Health Minister, Matt Hancock, who was defending the intended appointment of the former Australian Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, as the lead British trade negotiator. Let's hear it.
Tony Abbott, who was the former Prime Minister of Australia, so I'm suggesting that he may well be potentially a UK trade ambassador. He says he feels threatened by homosexuality. He also says elderly people should have been left to die naturally from COVID and men are better set to exercise authority than women. Is he the right sort of person to represent us?
Well, as far as I understand it, the proposal is that Mr. Abbott supports the UK on trade policy, which is an area in which he's got a huge amount of expertise. You know, I bow to nobody in my support for everybody to love who they love, whoever that is. As you know, and as we've talked about a lot, but I think, you know, we need to have the best experts in the world working in their field. And as the former Prime Minister of Australia, obviously Mr. Abbott has got a huge amount of experience.
Even if he's a homophobic misogynist?
Well, I don't think that's true.
Told you what he said. I'm sure you don't support some of his comments. He's a homophobe and he's a misogynist.
Well, he's also an expert in trade.
So one plays off against the other? Really? Is that really what you're saying, Health Secretary? Come on.
As it happens, he ain't an expert in trade either, according to those people who know. What do you make of that, Caitlin McBride?
I think that this is the type of car crash interview that we haven't actually seen in some time. And this idea that you can reconcile somebody who is misogynistic, homophobic, and also, let's not forget, a climate denier, and say that he is a so-called expert in trade and therefore it's absolutely fine. I mean, to think that there is not anyone else who is perhaps an expert in trade and could act as some kind of a, you know, trade envoy in Brexit, post-Brexit, is ridiculous, as if he is the only qualified individual for this role. I think in addition to even to what Kay Burley had said, there was several other comments that you can find that he made that aren't just offensive, that they are anti-fact. I mean, he said in 2017 that climate change is actually probably doing some good. And he said he likened policies to combat it to, quote, primitive people once killing goats to appease the volcano gods. Why this is the person that they have chosen to be kind of a messiah of trade in the coming years is again, once again, baffling.
What do you make of this, Carl Dieter?
I don't know. I was listening to the interview. I thought he sounded like a bit of a buffoon and she sounded like a psycho ex-girlfriend. The thing is the guy good or is the guy not? That's the only thing that matters. So I suppose, you know, I thought about this earlier. So actually, I want to ask you a question, Matt. Imagine if you found out one of your kids needed a surgery and there's this surgeon and he is the best, but he also happens to be a fundamental Muslim or Christian or something, doesn't like gay people, you know, doesn't believe in equal rights, all these other things, but the best in the world. Or you can have someone who has the right attitude about all sorts of things and they've got, you know, not as good a hit rate. Who would you get to do the surgery?
That's what you call a rhetorical question. They don't normally get asked by the guests or the presenter. Caitlin, how is the letting off of fireworks in Dublin being somehow connected to the theft of dogs?
Well, we've known for the last few months that there's been an increase in dog nappings all around Dublin and around Ireland overall. But as people have become increasingly aware of the tactics that people are using in order to take dogs, they have to be more creative. So now there's reports that by this excessive use of fireworks is a way to kind of track dogs to see, essentially kind of tracking their houses by hearing the barking dogs react. So, I mean, there's been kind of reports of fireworks going off in certain neighborhoods for the last 6 weeks. And I think anyone who's ever lived in any way adjacent to Dublin city centre, as I did for 5 years, will know that fireworks is unfortunately a year-round activity, but usually without any kind of a sinister motive. And October, obviously, it usually peaks around Halloween time. But this has been going on for about 6 weeks now. And a lot of residents in certain areas are saying that they've been able to detect that by letting off fireworks for a certain period of time over however many minutes or perhaps up to an hour, that if you are interested in stealing a dog, you can simply follow the bark and mark houses where you think that there might be a dog residing, and you can do something as simple as climb over a back fence and go grab it at an appropriate time. So, I mean, I suppose like anything, you have to get more creative when people know your tricks, but there is a little bit, I don't know, I think we need to see, I suppose, how valid these complaints and these suggestions are.
Indeed, I wonder how true it is. We have a lot to get through, so I'm going to move on to our next item. The idea that children won't be allowed, Carl, to go trick-or-treating at Halloween this year because it would breach social distancing rules. What do you reckon of that?
Oh, I reckon that the people who want to just take all the fun out of life are finally starting to gain sway. They're being listened to, and it's an awful mistake. If you're going trick-or-treating, you're staying outdoors, you know, wear a mask, take all the normal precautions. But the thing,
in fairness, the whole thing about trick-or-treating is wearing a mask anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Matt, you've got jokes today. I'm happy with that. You got me earlier on as well with the rhetorical question. Yeah, so I mean, like, what is it about a pandemic that makes people want to ruin all joy in the world? Because that's really what is at the root of this. You know, they're saying, oh, Halloween's not going to work, can't do this, can't call around. I mean, like, I don't know. I think there's actually just this generalized movement in society where people want to lock down and close down everything. And whether it's trick-or-treating, whether it's bars, or whether it's, you know, concerts, all the stuff, they're like, no, no more fun and joy, just dark skies and misery. I think that the far better choice is for people to go out, do things responsibly, do your trick-or-treating, don't listen to this nonsense. The only reason we're even talking about it is because it's like half ridiculous news anyway. And just get on with normal life with the precautions that we're being given, as long as those precautions are sensible. Obviously, you know, I disagree with the whole thing on the pubs.
Clearly, you do. I suppose you're the right person to ask as well about John Cleese asking, can you tell me a woke joke?
I was trying to think about a joke that would be woke, and the only one I could think of is, what's red and bad for your teeth? a brick. But then I figured I'd probably trigger someone who maybe got a brick in the head before. Now they've got PTSD and I'm the worst guy in the world. There's no such thing as woke humor. Woke people are the most joyless, soulless, lost folks you'll ever find. They're constantly miserable. So John Cleese is actually a good example of a guy who had actually championed politically correct culture in many ways. And he was right to, and especially from where society was. But he's also part of the backlash against it because he sees where it has gone to when taken to its extreme. And, you know, I guess he's just being half disparaging about the idea. But the idea that we can get to a point where humor, you're not allowed to make humor, or you have to start apologizing for humor you did 20 years ago, or you get canceled. We've seen that time and again. You know, you've seen it with Kevin Hart. You've seen it multiple examples. And I'm not saying that what anybody said at the time was okay. We maybe shouldn't laugh at it today. But, like, you've got to, especially with comedy, understand that the offensive nature of it is sometimes what makes it great. If you look at comedians like Andrew Dice Clay, oh, you'd cry tears of blood listening to the guy. But he's also very funny. And that's the thing. We're going to lose that if we insist that no one is ever offended.
Okay, Caitlin McBride, what do you make of that?
I don't know if my opinions are as strong as Carl's on it, but I would think that, I'm probably going to be the neutral here, but I think John Cleese is part of a group of people who are, and I would agree somewhat rightfully, vocal against the backlash, against kind of policing language, essentially, and by, you know, woke jokes and cancel culture, neither of which I necessarily agree with. But this idea, I think comedy is kind of the last safe terrain of where you can say things that you never normally would. And once it's done well enough and once it makes you laugh, then that's kind of it, isn't it? I mean, I think that to have this overly sensitive audience, I'll be honest with you, I think it's very difficult kind of for me in kind of this post-Me Too world, where you find out how difficult it's been for women in comedy, in particular over the last few years. And there's increasingly number of stories coming around in seemingly every country in the world that had a comedy culture, how difficult it was for women to kind of be part of that scene. And I just think that if you can just have something, instead of having, you know, policing these so-called woke jokes, if you can just have more diverse group of opinions coming out, I think it's much harder to offend people. And I think that's where a lot of the frustrations come from.
Okay, Carl, you're really getting people wound up today. One listener says pandemics are too PC. Another one says, forget trick-or-treating. Will the children be allowed to sit on Santa's knee this year? Will he wear a mask or a face shield over his beard? Imagine the queues, says Andrew. In relation to the trick-or-treating, a listener says, yeah, sticking your hands into bags of candy that hundreds of others have done before you, Carl. And another one, it sounds like Carl Dieter sucked the joy out of life long before COVID-19.
Ah, Matt, you know, if there's one thing I love in life, it's the Today FM texters, because they set you straight and chop you down. You would never have to worry about getting too big for your britches with them out there. Folks, thanks for sending the messages in. As always, I'm not going to pay a blind bit of notice to anything you say.
Okay.
Look, putting your hand into a trick-or-treat bucket, like, okay, then when trick-or-treaters come to your door, you hand it out. Hand it to them, you know. Pop it into their bag. Like, there's ways around this. This is not brain surgery, you know. So I think that people just need to use their cop on.
Okay, well, one final thing, and this is a much more serious issue as well. Should we stop the daily announcement of the new COVID-19 cases, Caitlin? Some people saying that that's increasing the misery that we keep hearing every day, the number of new cases. And, well, fortunately, over the last 12 days or so, there have been no extra deaths. But should we just be having a once a week briefing, or do we need transparency on a daily basis?
Well, I think that was part of, I mean, certainly the early response and kind of over communicating was definitely beneficial from the government strategy. And I think people really found that quite to be reassuring. Whereas now we have reached a point where it's been several months of living with COVID, and there is certainly no end in sight. I mean, they're saying it'll realistically be a part of our lives for the next probably 2 to 4 years. So at some point, we are going to have to say that we have to learn to live alongside that. And as part of that is going to be not necessarily backfooting communication, but more effective communication, because I think that this government has certainly shown that they
know how to communicate, but absolutely ineffectively. So I think that in this case, it is doctors who are kind of pleading for weekly briefings, because they're also pointing out that the increase in anxiety that they're seeing. So, I mean, there's two GPs who have spoken in relation to this, who've said that they're seeing an increase in anxiety in patients because it's kind of a constant reminder of the misery. And, you know, we know how to live alongside COVID. We know how to live alongside it safely. We know the precautions. People respond accordingly to new regulations and implementations when they're brought in. And that's kind of all we can do. And I think if you can have a very effective weekly meeting, because there's also, you get desensitized. I mean, I'm getting push notifications every night about the number of cases or the diagnoses of the day, and thankfully the decrease in deaths.
Carl Dieter, last word on this particular topic to you.
Yeah, everything Caitlin said, mostly agree with. I think the daily announcements do need to stop. It's become a kind of a health-oriented soap opera where people who just crave misery tune in, find out these numbers, go off, stress about it. You know, that doesn't need to continue. I think that the general kind of leadership management needs to be a far more reassuring, the future is bright message. This doesn't feed into that, nor does it make people comply anymore. It just increases your stress levels. And we are, if we're going to get through this together, we've got to do it in a way where people can get their head around what's happening. And those daily figures, they're not helping anything. They just make people more worried.
Although I believe that, I think it's Spain where they stopped it and went to weekly briefings. And then afterwards, people complained bitterly that the weekly stats became a little bit unwieldy and didn't give information as was wanted. And of course, they have a much bigger problem again in Spain has grown than in other countries. Anyway, Caitlin McBride, thank you very much for having been with us. And Carl Dieter as well for joining us here on The Last Word at Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.